Now, the latest ESRI report has found that 29% of 12-year-olds and 44% of 22-year-olds are eating more junk food since the start of lockdown. So to look at the impact this will have on our children, I'm joined by Orla Walsh, who is a dietitian at the Dublin Nutrition Centre, and Dr. Sarah Jane Belton, who's a lecturer in physical education at the School of Health and Human Performance at DCU. You're both very welcome to the programme.
Thanks for having us on.
Hi, Orla, I might start with you from the dietitian point of view. I suppose when I saw these findings, I wasn't very surprised, and I wondered if they'd kept going up the order, you know, to 44-year-olds, to 66-year-olds. I'm sure we're all probably finding a bit of comfort in extra junk food since lockdown has started. What was your reaction to the findings?
Well, I wasn't surprised. You know, it does show that you know, more junk food has been eaten. It shows that more girls are eating more junk food in comparison to boys. And I suppose as well is that this behaviour has increased as the years went on. So they looked at 12-year-olds and 22-year-olds. And even if we look at the girls, around a third of the girls at 12-year-old were eating more junk food, and around half at 22. So it's a kind of a growing trend as people get older. I suppose that was something that I picked out in terms of the gender difference as well as the age difference, but also a worrying thing, and I don't know if it's just because I work in the area of eating disorders or it's just because I know that eating disorders are on the rise. There was a 12% of 12-year-olds actively eating fewer sweets and less junk food, and to me that's it can be just as worrying.
Okay, yeah, if it goes the other way. Now, the other part of the story, Orla, I guess, that jumped out at me is because I'm guilty of this, is, you know, parents using sort of comfort or junk food to help their children cope with lockdown. So, you know, we're all living quite a kind of monotonous existence at the moment. So, you know, has there been dessert after lunch and dessert after dinner in many houses? I mean, I don't know. I'm not admitting to anything, but I would say that is probably something that's happening, or, you know, certainly an extra little treat that maybe wouldn't have been part of the normal setup before lockdown.
Oh, listen, if you're not going to admit it, I am. There's more treats in our house and there's more screen times. I was raising my son without screen time before COVID, and that has taken a turn. It has changed so much for us. I will do a lot of things just to put the smile on their face and the smile on our face. And also when your kids are happy, you're happier. I guess what we need to be aware of is that there's no definite end to COVID. It's not a case of this is the behavior that's in our household now and we'll solve it at X date. And the longer behavior carries on, the more embedded it can become. So I guess what we all need to do, and I suppose there's adults listening going, you know, I'm eating more junk food, I'm eating more sweets. And I suppose we need to first acknowledge that food is comforting and food brings us joy, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that and abnormal. I guess what we need to do is we need to work on the relationship with food on with all the children we're raising, and kind of look at it and go, okay, well, you're getting comfort and joy from food, but what else can you get comfort and joy from? And sometimes it just, you know, takes a 5 seconds, 5 minutes even for parents to sit back and think and going, okay, well, what else can we do with them that will comfort them or reward them or energize them at the times of the days that we are reaching for the less healthy food? And, you know, it's using, I suppose, teaching them to use other things other than food at this time in their life is really important. They're likely to carry it on into later life. And we also need to be aware that if our eating habits and lifestyle habits become less healthy during the pandemic, which a lot of people can relate to, we're going to have additional conditions, diseases, or poorly controlled conditions and diseases when all of this, you know, peters out and comes to some sort of end.
Yeah, it's interesting. I suppose once you start doing something, it's kind of, you know, it is quite hard to roll back from it. While, you know, there mightn't be anything wrong with that extra treat at the minute, if it becomes a habit, it is hard to break habits then. Sarah Jane, let me bring you in here. You're a lecturer in physical education at DCU. I guess a lot of us feel maybe that people are getting more exercise because it just seems like all any of us are doing are walking and walking and walking and walking. But I suppose there has been a reduction overall in physical activity in terms of the length of time people, children, are being active. Are you concerned by some of what you saw in the report?
Yeah, I mean, concerned but not surprised. Mm. I mean, it's similar to what yourself and Orla have said. This was expected, and it is consistent with what we would expect. But it is concerning, and the health impact, which Orla has spoken about for nutrition, is compounded when you add the fact that there's increased sedentary screen time and there is reduced physical activity time. So all of these have health risks independent of each other. So when somebody increases one and reduces the other simultaneously, then these things are compounded and the picture becomes worse. I think what's really happened, as Orla has said, is that the behaviour has changed, the patterns of behaviour have changed. We've been taken so completely from what we were doing to something new that while, yes, we do have some positive things, and I think what you've highlighted there, Susan, is really important, we're seeing more people out and active. So we're seeing that more. So that means there's a new behaviour there that wasn't there before. Now, the unseen is the other probably more structured activity that people were doing that has now disappeared. If we can get to a point where each person and each family is, I suppose, looking inward and saying, right, well, what has changed? And what are the good things that we're doing now that we weren't doing before? And really try and harness that, because there are some green shoots, excuse me, that we need to try and harness. But at the same time, we have to look, as Orla said there, at, well, what are we doing now that isn't as positive? What has gone missing from our lives? It's the sport, it's the recreation, it's the, you know, going to the gym for the young 22-year-olds and so on. And commit to making sure that as the environment allows us, that we get back to those things, but also maintain the new positive habits that have evolved. I mean, one of the nice things looking at the report is the significant increase in time spent with family. When we look at our 12-year-old particularly, one of the greatest influencers for children at that age is family. And if that time with family, if we can turn that to positives, if we can turn that to harnessing positive behaviours and enacting these positive behaviours with the kids, well, that can have long-lasting positive health implications. But of course, if it's negative behaviours that we're actually impacting here, well, that will also have long-lasting negative impact.
Yeah, it's really interesting, actually, because, you know, before lockdown, that age group, 12-year-olds, you know, if they had their choice, they'd probably spend as little time as possible, you know, in direct company with their parents and siblings. But this has kind of forced that situation. Sarah Jane, I wanted to ask you about speculation, obviously, that, you know, after the announcement for what's going to happen after the April 5th, which we'll get next week. Obviously, there's a lot of talk about outdoor sport, whether it will be permitted for kids. It always concerns me that children who aren't involved in a GAA club or a football club will be left behind in this move. Like, while it will be great for children who are involved in a team sport, there are so many young people who aren't. And, you know, they probably need some sort of structured outdoor activity as well. Would you agree with that, or what's your view on it?
Yeah, no, look, and that's I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's a huge challenge. It's a huge challenge. And there are so many kids, be it gymnastics or basketball or badminton or whatever the sport might be, that aren't going to get that opportunity. I mean, I'm not even sure that the outdoor, the GAA and the soccer and so on will go ahead too quickly. I mean, the way things are looking. But you're right, there's a disparity there. And it's a difficult one. Where possible, I would say to clubs, if it's possible to do something outside, even if it's not necessarily your sport, for example, if it's a badminton club, you may not be able to do that, but can you do some sort of multi-sport activity with them outdoors? Can that be done? Because if we can do that, it brings the kids back to that structured play, which they love and they enjoy, and we see the kids back in playgrounds now, and that's what they're doing. It's that semi-structured play that they get to do in a safe outdoor space. So where possible.
Yeah, and we know that age group, even that we're talking about there, 12-year-olds, like, we know that there is that kind of natural breakaway from sport at that point, you know, maybe at the transition of primary into secondary school, you know, especially when it comes to maybe team sports, that they are turned off by it at a certain point. So if there is something that keeps them interested, all the better to try and encourage that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's such an important point. And I think that comes through really strongly in the SRI report, that these are a group at a very vulnerable age. And we know that physical activity levels decline dramatically with age, particularly over the periods of transition at primary to post-primary and then from kind of junior cycle to senior cycle. So we know that's an issue. And we know these kids are quite vulnerable. So the other side, I would say, is that as parents, what we can try and do is take this time with kids of that age to really try and identify what are the physical activities that they enjoy and really try and harness that and just develop those positive habits, because it's almost like you have a menu, no more so than with food and nutrition. You have a menu of options available to you, and it's trying to identify the options that are motivating to them, that they enjoy doing, and that they can see themselves sustaining in the long term. So we really need to take a multi-pronged approach of this, I think, through the schools, through parents, through clubs, to try and make sure that we protect these kids.
Orla, let me just come back to you finally. I mean, I think maybe for that group that we're talking about, particularly the younger group there, the 12-year-olds, it is very hard for, I guess, younger people to understand that what they're eating will not only impact their physical health, but really will impact how they feel about things. I'm conscious of Easter coming up next weekend. You're going to tell us now that there's a limit on the amount of Easter eggs that all of us should be eating next weekend, are you?
Yeah, well, I am the food police, apparently. No, I think it's really important that we acknowledge the fact that food has a really positive impact on mood. So a Mediterranean style diet that's high in fibre, as per the SMILE study, has shown to really improve depressive scores. And, you know, but I suppose when your mood is low, that might not be the food you necessarily reach for. So I guess it's kind of what Sarah Jane was saying, that we need to take this opportunity and take as much positive from it that will these kids can bring into adulthood. And one thing is teaching them to use other things other than food to draw comfort from during these times, because, you know, unfortunately, more junk food and more sweets, which is the terms used in the report I was given, is going to have a negative impact on mood, both in the short and long term. So we have to acknowledge that and try and rectify it as much as possible, but obviously with keeping a healthy approach to it.
Okay, interesting. Orla Walsh, dietitian at the Dublin Nutrition Centre, and Dr. Sarah Jane Belton, lecturer in physical education at the School of Health and Human Performance at DCU. Thank you both for your time on News Talk Breakfast this morning.